greetings and a hello from Earl. He's not going to make it again today. He was in buoyant spirits last evening, and he was sure he was going to make it today, and he got out of bed, and he was kind of queasy and weak. And so he's very, very sorry that he can't do it. And he's such a pleasant guy. And this morning you're going to learn that I love philosophy much more than astrology. It's going to be more philosophy than astrology because that's really my nature. Now, we're doing something different today. And this presented another kind of difficulty because I wasn't able to do at all what I wanted to do because of my current incapacities. I wanted to show connections and intentions from one rebirth to another rebirth, which is really what most people would like to know. There's a lot of bullshitters out there that claim that this aspect means that from past life, and they have no concept of what a past life is like, and they don't have the vision that they can follow somebody from rebirth to rebirth. So it's something that everybody wants, and because there are extremely few trained clairvoyants around, I myself, not being one of them, couldn't do the investigative work that was necessary. There are some clairvoyants around, and they give you sort of a who was who kind of thing, that this person was reborn as that person, and some of them corroborate each other without even intending to do so. So you can see that they didn't even know each other or that each other was doing the investigations, but what they did is they came up with the same information by their own clairvoyance, which is, I think, a pretty good test of accuracy. Now, they tell who was who in some cases, and in some cases you have reliable birth data. But the birth data for one life that you have, you may not have one for the antecedent or the succeedent rebirth before and after that, so it's very hard to trace things. You have biographical and autobiographical information for some of the people, but it's very hard to make a horoscope working backwards because there are so many many things that can produce similar things. Now, sometimes you can follow a person because they're famous in history and get some ideas. We're going to have one mystery guest that way. But at any rate, the way it is that as more and more people become clairvoyant and more, soon the physical world is a world of limitations. And soon, the limitations of what can be learned from the physical world will be reached. But about that time, more and more people will have clairvoyance. And then the investigations, what it was learned in procedures for understanding things by scientific investigation now can be applied to really meaningful things, soulful things. You can follow people from past to life, from life to life, then you can investigate the moral growth, and using astrology, you can understand in principle what they were trying to do and how they got to what they got to out of that kind of astrological configuration. So we can see there's a good future ahead for investigation if you like doing investigations. So what we're going to do is we're going to try and look at horoscopes of people that have really ripe to overripe destiny that is tied to immediate previous lives and see what we can come up with. We will have one famous person that's going to be a guessing game for everyone to see who it is. We call it the mystery horoscope. So we're talking about the universe when we're talking about astrology. And the word universe means one. There is that word unity right within it. There is this means there can only be one universe. And if there was more than one universe, if you could get around that contradiction of terms, you couldn't know the other one unless you belonged to it. And if you belonged to it, it would just be another part of the one universe. So we're dealing with a very closed system. And we're talking about cyclical destiny, where we go through a life cycle, where we go through all the different stages of development, from infancy to old age, and those stages of development are really different from each other. I'm at that age now where I'm beginning to do more looking back, and I marvel at how different consciousness was at different times. The base consciousness, you're always awake right now. That's the same. That doesn't change. But as you go old in life, the slant that you have on life is very, very different. And you look at your consciousness as it is now and you say, wow, how could I have become this from what I was back then? And the way I felt things and the way I thought about things, for the most part, everything gets better. If you're a spiritual person, old age should be looked forward to, and it's not something that you regret, because every year your consciousness gets deeper, and every year you can understand more things. Of course, that what goes along with that, when you look back, it's always like retrospection. You're ashamed of, you know, like, how could I have been so shallow, and how could I have been such a callous person with no regard for people. I still am that, I suppose, to some extent. But you go through cycles, and as you go through cycles, you have different understandings. So we've been looking at linear times of cause and consequence, and now we're looking at moments where we're trying to get connections between one life and another. Now, astrology works the same, whether we're using linear time or whether we're using cyclical time, because it is a stopped action, and one life is linear. We go forward from beginning to end. And that unless we can see the whole cycle, most people don't know about rebirth. So, we can learn a lot from cycles. We can look at two-dimensional cycles, and there are two kinds of them. There are horizontal cycles and there are vertical cycles. Horizontal cycles are like going through a year. You know, you start out with spring and you get into summer, and then you have the reminiscence of fall, and then everything dies away with winter time. So that's a horizontal cycle. Or if you're looking at a color wheel, that's another horizontal cycle. Even if you have a color sphere, that's even really a flat cycle, but it's all horizontal. When you have a vertical cycle, you have the cycle passes through higher states of consciousness. And those higher states of consciousness, we really don't have a preposition for them. They are within, and they are before, and they are antecedently causal, and they have, you know, there's, when you're talking about the inner worlds and passing through succeedingly higher states of consciousness, we don't have words for that. So when we're talking about the life cycle, we're talking about a cycle that goes into different realms and not just in a cycle in the same realm where everything is flat and you get variety, but variety with more repetition. Now, I'm probably way away from the notes here. This will probably be a short thing because I'm starting to get a little bit weary. So the material plane is not enough alone. What we understand from the material plane is fine. There is now a man that is a scientist that he can give you the experience of God. He has found precisely the point in the brain that is activated when people have religious experiences. And he can activate that, and then you have a religious experience and you think you found God. And he said, well, there really probably isn't any God. I can give you that same experience, and you don't need that. He fails to recognize that one would be a fool to doubt what he has, that, you know, that there is such a spot, and that spot can be activated, and that it simulates some kind of a spiritual experience. But that doesn't mean that there is the real thing, and that the real thing stimulates it in a very different way. So these kinds of problems we have to face all the time with materialists. You know, there's a good critique of it. It's called A Dog's Tale. It's by Mark Twain. Mark Twain wrote two very lovely anti-vivisections stories. One is called The Dog's Story, and one is called The Horse's Story. And it goes into that very subject. It's a little bit gruesome, but it sure gets you to think about vivisection in a way that is not very pleasant. All right. So we're going to be looking at vertical cycles. We're going to look at things that take precedence. Some things are more important than other things. Famous analogy that if you're in a boat and the boat is very slowly sinking, but it won't sink if you throw something out that weighs 65 pounds. What do you throw out? Do you throw out the radio, which weighs 65 pounds, or do you throw out the child, which weighs 65 pounds? Obviously, one is much more important than the other, and so there are things. There are realms of our being that are more valuable. They're more meaningful. They're usually creative realms. We don't just get from chemistry coming together. We don't get creativity from that. That's in the realm of consequences, or in the realm of effects, and not within the realm of thought. So we can see this. This is a standard thing. We see forms. And we see that the forms live and grow, and they grow into a shape. And that shape is not controlled by chemistry. There are experiments that demonstrate that there is a field of life into which the forms grow. So there is a life that produces vitality. It also produces energy in another level. But behind that life, there is a more antecedent level and a level of motivation. A level of motivation so that things are driven to act, driven to use that energy. And beyond that, there are thoughts. Behind every emotion, or not everyone, but because there is some autonomy in the desire body, behind that is thought. Thoughts, we think something is something worth doing, and then we project that thought into the realm of emotion, and it becomes a motive force, and that motive force brings us to take action, and then there is change in the physical world. But thoughts aren't the ultimate reality either. There is a truth knower. There is a being that wants the experience. There is a being that has a sense of purpose. So we have a selfhood, and each of these states of existence is antecedent, and each of them brings about the states that follow after them. So when we're talking about a cycle like a cycle of rebirth, we're talking about a spiritual being that wants to come back, a spiritual being that is communing with itself, which means it is communing with God. And when it is communing with God, it gets the concept of the entire cosmos, why we are here. It gets the big picture. And it says, I want to participate. And it creates an idea of a life that is a miniature of the cosmos. And that idea gets precipitated into concrete existence as a thought form called an archetype. Everything begins with thought. And when the life has been thought out, that thinking activates in a much different kind of causality, a much bigger causality. It activates our complete history of emotion, feeling, and desire, and it attracts to it the emotional stuff that is necessary for a new life. After that, it attracts to it the vital stuff that is needed. And eventually, the vital stuff is placed into the focus for all material stuff, and that is placed in the womb of the mother. And so there is this cycle where we follow back. After we die, we look at what we have done, and we follow the causes back until we reach the creative source in spirit, and then we come to rebirth down the vertical chain in the way just described. Now, these are cycles of the type that we all participate in. Everything has cycles. For example, there are mineral cycles. A mineral gets taken up by a plant. And even though it's not aware of it, its consciousness is affected by the consciousness that works in and through the plant. And so it is elevated. The plant gets eaten by an animal or by a human being. And in some cases, it's eaten by an animal, which is later eaten by a human being, and the mineral is exposed to yet a higher kind of consciousness, a consciousness that involves thought and intention and such. Eventually, the mineral is either excreted or the person dies, and non-green plants reduce it back to the mineral state. This is a life cycle of a mineral. It takes place in just a few short years, but after many, many, many replications of such a cycle, the inductive effect begins to awaken consciousness within the mineral itself. Now, some spiritual researchers have found that in passing into the plant, sometimes elements or the consciousness that is in the element of a mineral gets transmuted so that it becomes another element. And this is a true alchemy that takes place in plants, and there are experiments that can demonstrate this. They're pretty much ignored by science because it's not a thing that you can do. It seems like an off-the-wall kind of experiment. The same experiment that's mentioned in the Cosmoconception, where they talk about weighing the vital body at death. That's something that no scientist has ever been able to refute, but they just don't continue on with that kind of research. So there is another kind of evolution where the minerals go through the periodic table, or yet another kind of evolution or cycle for the minerals where they are at the surface and they are in soil, and then they get washed down and become sediment. They get pressed into the earth, where at the center of the earth, the tremendous creative forces there, they are fused by heat and they become crystalline and they become transformed. Some of them even maintain the residual forms of when they were plant-like, and then they come to the surface again as mountains. So what we are living in is a much more dynamic thing than we realize. What we are living in is, we're living out a cycle that is composed of other cycles. So we're living in a cycle within cycles, and our whole life, if we can see it in that kind of dynamic and we can see ourselves participating in something in progress, it sure changes our view of things. Things aren't just fixed. And when we don't have that fixed consciousness, we ourselves realize that we can change. And that is very provocative of living a more evolutionary kind of life. All right, this is way away from the notes again, I guess, and I'll have to try to find some way to catch back up. I'll just skip some things here all together and get going so that we're talking about progress through linear and cyclical experiences. But our lives are not exactly like what we just described with the plants. It isn't that we incrementally move forward. We do to some extent. Our growth is very, very slow. I've been trying very hard now for 40-some years to grow up and change. And I've made some changes, and I can see they're the results of efforts. But there are minimal, very, very small changes at all. But when we grow and when we go from life to life, it isn't that we leave off exactly where we leave off in one life, that we begin there in the next life in the same place. Because human consciousness is divine consciousness. And the divine consciousness is in everything. And it is multifarious in its expression, many forms, many ways that it can express, and the material world is too limited. Our personality, our body, our ability to learn things is too limited, and we would become too specialized if we took up exactly where we left off. So from life to life, it's very hard to predict, and this is what makes astrology so difficult. It's not just a continuation. It's much more like composing music. It's very much like a Beethoven symphony. A theme is developed, and then various things are done with that theme. It gets inverted or it gets played off against itself, and then it gets set aside. And then another theme is developed, and then the first theme is brought back, and in the interaction between the first and second themes, things are brought out of both of them. And then both of them might be set aside until the last movement, and then they're brought forward again. So what happens between lives is we might work on something like honesty for a few lives, and we might work on a specific art. But then the spirit realizes, or sometimes it's helped by the recording angels, to realize that it needs something perhaps much more down to earth. And then it lives a different kind of life. The needs that a human being has are not so simply linear. It's a very difficult thing to figure out. We see something we see that we get surprised by. We have a friend, and we have another friend, and we bring them together, and we can pretty much understand how they are going to interact because we know how this one relates to this kind of thought and such. But sometimes people come together that seem extremely improbable. Like, how are these two people together and they're so close with each other and we can never guess it? It's because there are things within one person that we don't see that match things within another person that we don't see, and there is a symbiosis where they each help each other to grow. And that's similar to what the way things work. We have in our soul nature all kinds of wonders. We have a whole catch box of miracles that we can all do, and that we need the variety, and that variety is not just a simple, I do this, and I do this, and I do this. It's like music. There's an artistic sense of what the soul needs, and that is what is brought from life to life. So you can see that what we're talking about is that there are that from life to life, it's not easy to predict. Some things follow in a very linear fashion and follow after each other, but we all have all kinds of things. And unfortunately, some of the things that we carry with us are a burden of many unredeemed past deeds. We have done a lot of things over a lot of lives, and because of our limitations and our inabilities to do some things, we have a backload of destiny, and that load has to be worked through. But it's important the way we work through it. I was just mentioning to somebody, I think it was Tuesday night, that I had an embarrassing experience at one time. As in fact, I'll list a couple of very embarrassing experiences. I stood up for a wedding at one time. And in the wedding party, I not only stood up, I stood out. Everybody else was normal in the wedding pictures. Who's that? But word got around that I had been spiritually influential to the groom and to the bride both. And that spiritually influential nature was picked up as, this guy can read palms. And they brought this little girl to me who was 10 years old. And I looked at her palm and I didn't know what to say, because she had the lines of someone where the emotions overpower the reasoning, and there were the lines of a murderer. And how do you tell a child or the parents of a child that she's likely to be a murderer? And so I just danced around that. But on another occasion, I had been studying handwriting analysis. And I was talking about it, and as soon as you talk about it, people are going to they're going to be at you. And I was a little bit wiser, I think, by this time. And someone came to me and gave a sample of handwriting and said, what's in this handwriting? And I was still bold. And I said, you have to be very careful, because you are a person that has tendencies to criminality. And the person said to me, oh, I've already been indicted. That's why I'm free during the day. I'm waiting for my trial to become. Coming out, they had been passing bad checks and stealing things and such like that. But from doing that, I came to realize something. The sequence that you overcome different things in your life, you have to be very careful about that. If a person is both timid and dishonest, you want to work on the dishonesty before you work on the timidity. Because if you don't, you'll have a very bold crook. And these are things that are taken into consideration when you come to rebirth. There's an enormous amount of wisdom. You know, like you hear people say, why is this happening to me? Life is so terrible. It couldn't have happened at a worse time for me. And these people do not realize that everything in their life is brought to them at precisely the time that it is for their best development. And instead of thinking with the blindness and selfishness that we have when we get locked in our personality and try to understand why something is happening so that we can fulfill it in a bigger and more harmonious way, it's a much better way to live. That's the way we should do it. But of course, all of this is, that I'm telling you now, is a gigantic alibi for the fact that I have very little to say about what I want to say with horoscopes. I'm trying, what is, you know, it's very difficult if you're not a clairvoyant to be able to determine what is the result of what from past lives. And it's all kinds of different things that you have to take into account, and you have to have the wisdom of the recording angels or be working with them in order to do that. I do believe that if you're trying to help people and the people are amenable to change in the form of improvement, that in praying over a horoscope or pondering over it or leaving it in your consciousness for a long time, I think you really do get help from divine beings. Then it doesn't mean that you're capable of hobnobbing with angels. It just means that the help is so vital that they'll even deign to do things with you, as base as we may be. So, we as human beings have a hard time working with the music of the spheres. There is a music that has a rhythm and that has a theme and that it develops. We as human beings, especially when we get here, we become blind to things. And for the most part, even though there is the music of the spheres in every horoscope, in our performance, we're usually flat. We're usually flat because we're slow and we're dulled and we have been numbed by material experience and the selfishness that is associated with it. Sometimes when we try to overcompensate in our lives, we become sharp, but even that is another form of being out of key. Like we should, if we were like the plants and animals, and we were completely in harmony with the ongoing things, our life should be a one. We should have experiences, but they should all be positive, and it shouldn't be necessary for us to have to undergo things like disease and such like that. So, when we come to rebirth, in some ways, we're building off of the past. It's like an ant bridge. There are ants, for example, in the Amazon, that when they migrate from one place to another, they come to a stream, and the first ant hangs onto a piece of something or another at the bank of the stream and dies. The next ant comes over and hangs onto that one, and pretty soon they have made an ant bridge all the way across the stream, and then some have sacrificed their life so that the whole colony can move on and migrate to where it needs to go. Some people see that we build off of the past into the future, and I think that's valid and that's viable. Sometimes it seems that we're pushed by the past, like we're forced, you know, like if, you know, it's sort of like if you're the victim of loan sharks, they're after you, you've got to move or that's the end of it, and your past pushes you forward. And similarly, the same is true with the future. Sometimes the future comes rushing at us, but in other cases, the future seems to lure us so that we follow the lure and we're pulled forward. Again, this is all part of a gigantic alibi for the fact that what we're trying to do when we understand horoscopes with respect to past lives and what a spirit is doing when it comes to rebirth, it's not an easy thing to figure out. There are all kinds of systems. There's a system that says, for example, that what is on your 12th house was your ascendant in previous lives. In the life just previous, and that what is your ascendant now will be your 12th house in the next life. And sometimes these things actually even work, especially with location. There's the ancient Ptolemaic map where it shows which country or which parts of the world are ruled by what planets and signs. And if you look on your 12th law house, you can see within maybe 15 or 20 places on the earth where you that are ruled by that sign where you were in a past life. And they work a lot of times. But human beings are not automatons. We're not machines because we don't follow any perfect system. There may be a perfect system to give us just what we need in a regular way, but we're so deviant. In some cases, we're stubborn, and in some cases, when we saw the last time we looked, the last horoscope we looked at was Nancy Layden's, who was extremely hardened, crystallized, and stubborn, and wasn't going to change. And so that kind of a system wouldn't work there. Some people may be bounding around and trying something totally different, and you can't predict in such cases either. So what I did in selecting these horoscopes is try to take horoscopes that had just taking one factor, one thing that is extremely ripe. And the 12th house is that. The 12th house is ripe destiny. It is the past relative to the present of the ascendant and the future of the first house. And when you look into the past, what is most ripe is what is indicated by the 12th house. Now, that could be from several lives back, but if you have a situation where you have a twin cusps, where you have the same sign on the 12th house as you do on the ascendant, this indicates that there's an especially close tie between past lives and the present. And if you have Saturn in the 12th house, Saturn represents ripe destiny. And so if you have Saturn in the 12th house, it is really overripe destiny. And so what I did is took horoscopes that have famous people or near famous people that have the same cusp on the 12th house as they do on the ascendant, and that had Saturn in the 12th house, and with that kind of a circumstance, they are most likely to have continued something from the immediate past life. And that was the criterion for choosing the horoscopes, and these are the horoscopes that we're going to look at today. No. Yes. No. It is more likely to be. 12th house can mean other things. It can also mean that this is somebody that has geared their life for solving some kind of universal problem. And that may or may not have to do with overripe destiny. The question you ask hinges on one of the most difficult parts of astrology. There is no way that you can tell what of the many things that a house rules is going to mean in this life. The fifth house may mean children, it may mean education, it may mean speculation, it may mean recreation, it may mean all of them, it may mean some of them. And there is no system that I know in astrology that tells you that. The only way you can find that out is by observation of the person's life or by having an intuition that this is what it means to this person. So like the 12th house, you know, usually, but you can't say always. This is the thing, it's the great temptation. I find that most people who develop systems for making astrology easy, the systems very quickly become gimmicks. Because when you think you have a system, then you think you have it in the bag. And a gimmick is something that is a substitute for sitting down and thinking, or a substitute for trying to focus intuition. It's hard work to understand a horoscope, and this is why people, for example, take Sabian symbols. They want to be able to blow your mind, and they want to understand what, you know. I'm not saying there's not something to Sabian symbols for each degree of the zodiac. And that they don't have a place in astrology. But if you're so hooked on the Sabian symbols doing what you should be doing with your own thinking, you're not really going to be doing much astrology. You're not going to be understanding somebody, what's going on in their soul and why their life is the way it is, because that Sabian symbol just pushes the thinking one level back. And if you take somebody's interpretation of the Sabian symbol, you might just well take their little ditty out of the book and read that, and that's not the same as life. All right. I'm on a roll. I get awfully preachy, don't I? It's a fist in hand all the time this time. All right. In what we're doing, we're only going to be looking at connections between one life and another. We'll look at various things in the horoscopes, but not all of them, and sometimes not even the most important ones. What we're most trying to understand is what comes ripe from past lives. Wow, we're almost late already, and we're just getting started. We'll do very little. How many of you have read that very delightful book, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, which was on the bestseller list for years? Oh yeah, you saw the movie. This first horoscope is Lady Chablais, that character that wrote a delightful novel, a delightful biography. What was most delightful about it was the title for it, the title for the biography was Hiding My Candy. This is, yes. Oh, okay. Well, so we got 20 minutes yet. All right. I might get tired out before then, and we might quit early. Lady Chablais is somebody that eventually became a transsexual, and she was a transvestite. A transvestite that hid her candy very well, so that you did not know that it was a male. And it was a real character of an individual. And it was in and out of the adventures of this man who wrote the book, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Now, after looking at the horoscope of Nancy Layden yesterday, when I started doing horoscopes for this talk and started looking at other transsexuals, I was surprised to find that there were several of them that had exactly the same pattern. That is, connections between the 12th house and the first house with common cusps and Saturn in the 12th house. So I was surprised, but I guess I shouldn't have been. You know, you can study, I've been studying astrology for a long time, and I still get surprised by it because there's part of me yet that still doesn't believe it. And when you start believing it, then you can really do much better and do much more with it. So we have Saturn in the 12th house indicating a really ripe destiny. And like in the Nancy Layden chart, Saturn and the Sun are afflicted. So this is somebody who carries not only a strong tie from the past life, but somebody who is discontented with himself. So there is a quality here, because it is in common signs, there is a quality here to want to look back to the past life because one feels unfulfilled. Like, I didn't carry it out. Let me do another repetition of this, and let me do what I should have done then. And the remembers from the past life is all tied up with gender. And a person wants to go back and be the gender of the past life. And so what we learn from the Nancy Layden's chart seems to carry into other people who are transsexuals. It's interesting that Saturn also squares Mercury and Venus, which tells us even more what is left over from the immediate past life. The Saturn square Venus indicates that the person has a lot of insecurity about love, a lot of insecurity about whether they are capable of love or whether they're loved. And Venus is a feminine planet, so this person is saying, well, maybe I didn't learn how to love right in a past life. And let me try this again. The way Saturn and Mercury work is not always, but in Saturn-Mercury combinations, there's often a lot of dishonesty. And because the Sun and Venus are involved in the conjunction, in the revolving conjunction, but through the reflection with Saturn, what happens is there's a lot of dishonesty about what the self really is, and a lot of dishonesty about what the gender really is. And there's a tendency to wedge between what a person is and what it isn't. So this is somebody who's trying to worm their way out, so to speak, of something from a past life. And this is why the person tried to be reborn and go back to the same gender as before. It's not a blasphemous saying that God made a mistake. It's just that there is an insecurity and an unfulfillment that is strong enough that it overpowers a sense of honesty, and there's an emotional need that they feel that this is what they have to do. Now, if you look at it, the masculine planets are squares. The Sun and Mars both make squares. Mars is square to Pluto. The Sun is square to Saturn. So there are positive aspects to both planets, both groups of planets, you might say. Mercury, Venus together with the Sun do trine the Moon, and Mars also trines Jupiter. But there are some fundamental squares, so there is some dissatisfaction with the masculine state. And there is insecurity about the feminine state. Now, they're not oppressively strong, so that this is somebody that is very antagonistic to the masculine state, nor is the attraction to the feminine state especially strong that this is somebody that is very hormonally feminine. In fact, this person had to take quite a few drugs in order to become a woman or to appear like a woman, even before the surgery to become a transsexual. So we can say that this is not specifically a gender issue as much as it is a matter of security. But since there's so many common sign planets, and there are several fixed signs, but the fixed sign planets are not strong, there's so much common sign activity in past lives, it doesn't have to be a strong repulsion of masculinity or a very strong attraction to femininity, because this is not what you would call a Hercules of a character. I don't know what more to say about that. Religion plays a large part in it. When functioning as a male, the Mars trine Pluto came in, and she was a Sunday school teacher. And was quite a, actually was even the assistant superintendent of the Sunday school. And then at a given point in life, I don't know the exact date, realized that she was gay. And then the gayness turned into a desire to be a cross-dresser, and that eventually led to the desire to be a transsexual. All right. Mars trine Jupiter, I'm sorry, yeah. I know what I'm wanting to say, but I don't say the words right. I'm focused on the thought, and that's a weakness of mine, I'm sorry. All right, let's look at the next horoscope. It's the horoscope of Jamie Lee Curtis. Everybody knows who this is, right? The television star. She's the daughter of Janet Lee and Tony Curtis, who in their day had the daydream romance with each other. They were both very handsome, beautiful, pretty people, and they were both movie stars, and this was the marriage made from heaven. Now, there is a persistent rumor about Jamie Lee Curtis that she is a hermaphrodite. The rumor has never been confirmed or denied. I have read one of the origins of the rumor. It was from professors that worked in the hospital, medical school professors, that described the different type of what they call intersexual developments. Jamie Lee Curtis is of the type, or it is intimated that she is of the type, that she was both chromosomally male and female, and that she literally had both sets of organs, external masculine organs, and that she was made to be, and I believe it was a choice by the parents, it was a choice that she was made to be a woman, because I guess she leaned more in that direction. Now this brings up we're not going to say a whole lot about the horoscope. I want to talk more about the ethics of it. Rumors cannot be proven by astrology. character can be discovered by astrology, but you can't take a rumor and say this proves that this person is a liar or that this person is a mechanic or something like that. They either have to be caught in a lie or they have to be, you know, like if you look at OJ's horoscope, did OJ do it? You can't prove that. You can see that there are some things that make it more likely that this is a person who's prone to violence and prone to violence where they lose control of themselves. Maybe we should have got the OJ chart up. But this you cannot prove or disprove rumors by astrology, and this is a reason why we really shouldn't say a lot about horoscopes like this, because we really don't know. Now, in this horoscope, there's a very strong square of Uranus to Jupiter. And Jupiter is right smack dab in the middle of Scorpio, which rules basic sexuality, genderness. Even though the feminine organs are ruled by Libra, the basic sexuality, they are activated with regard to testosterone, which is certainly a Scorpio thing. Now, Uranus is the captain of the endocrine system. And every time that you find Uranus in affliction, it indicates there are endocrine problems. The endocrine problems are usually with the strongest planet in the horoscope, for positive or negative, whether or not the planet aspects Uranus. In this case, Uranus is in a square. It's afflicted. It's a pretty strong affliction. It's actually in two squares because it squares Mars also. Now, it's square to Jupiter as its strongest square, which means a condition that is hyper rather than hypo. It means something excessive rather than something minimal. And so what we're something that's underdone. The fact that Mars is brought into this T-square indicates probably that, though not intended, there is more masculinity coming from the vital body, which works directly through the endocrines. There's only one endocrine gland that is attached to the nervous system, and that is the pituitary body. The endocrines communicate with each other through the blood, and they communicate with each other through the etheric part of the blood, and they are regulatory. It is the work of the vital body to control the dense physical. And it does that directly because the nervous system is often in the hands of the complex of the mind and desires. And so this is why in our body the endocrine glands are consolidations or crystallizations from the etheric vital body. So what we're talking about here is that there is a hormonal condition and probably a DNA condition. Now, sun and moon are both in martial signs. And so the basic spiritual masculine and the basic spiritual feminine are martialized. And she has a pretty ginger character. But that still doesn't prove whether she is a transvestite or not. The sun is conjoined to Bangula, which is a malefic fixed star that is very likely to indicate sexual problems, but not necessarily gender problems. The thing that, you know, all the people who rumor about this or who speculate about this point to the fact that she had no children, that all of her children had to be adopted, and there has been admission that there is a problem. The problem, if you look from the 12th house, the planets in the 12th house, the Saturn, Mercury, they are, especially Mercury, are in a quincunx with Mars in the 5th house, indicating that there is something masculine that has to do with the ripe destiny from the 12th house, and it involves children because Mars is in the 5th house. So we again have testimony that there's likely to be a problem that has to do with masculinity, that has to do with having children, but this does not prove that she is a hermaphrodite. what we're wanting to look at is the 12 talus. There is, again, a carryover from the 12 talus. But the only aspectation to the Saturn Mercury in the 12 talus is that is important. There's Mercury square the moon, which indicates an indecisiveness. Mercury trine the moon, which indicates a rapid relationship between emotion and mind. But the quincunx between Mercury and Saturn to Mars indicates some gender problems carried over from the past, but we don't know exactly what they are. All right, let's... Yes? That's always a possibility, but I don't think that's likely, because the parents are relations with the parents are the 10th and 4th house, and the strongest factors in this chart are not coming from the 4th and 10th house. I think, if anything, what is a strong factor is the sexual obsessiveness or the gender obsessiveness that would be associated with the Pluto being square to Venus and the Sun. The Venus square Pluto indicates an emotional or a love obsessiveness, and that would be a more likely cause for something that would be a motive force. No, we're only talking about her. We're only talking about the individual.
Okay, so this is something that was...
This is something...
generated from past life effectively to deal with this kind of issue?
Something from the past life caused this kind of thing, and that when it is caused, you have to deal with it. When Saturn's in the 12th house, it's pretty hard to not deal with it, even though there's an awful lot of common sign destiny in this. Now, I don't think this will ever be solved. The reason for that is half of the planets are in the 4th, the 8th, and the 12th houses, which are houses that deal with mysteries and secrets and things like that, and they're very hard to be brought to the surface. And so I don't think that there's going to be a grand expose that someday... somebody's going to say, yes, this is what it was, and probably it shouldn't be made public. It would be interesting for us if we could understand if the person did say yay or nay, and we would have facts to work with. It's always easier to think and come to good conclusions if you have good facts. All right, let's... Yes.
What do you think generated this kind of sexuality?
Obsession, gender obsession, and thoughts that were fixated. Not so fixed. The Saturn conjoined Mercury is a fixation, but because it's in common sign, it's not a deep fixation, as deep of a fixation as it would be if it were in a fixed sign. This is somebody, I believe, that if this is true and they're in that kind of a situation, this is somebody that is going to learn from it and move on. It's not like Nancy Layden's, where there's the possibility that she's going to get stuck and have to deal with it again in another life because of the intransigence in this one. All right, the next horoscope is Starhawk. I have friends who study with Starhawk. Starhawk is a neo-pagan who claims to be a witch. And I've known quite a few people in life that claim to be witches and claim to do magic. And in almost every case, I don't believe them. It is they don't have the strength either of emotion that they could by their desire propel a magical force, or they don't have the strength of character that they would be willing to deal with the invisible, imponderable forces from the inner worlds and direct them magically. I find that there are a lot of people that do not adjust well to this world, and they escape into the fantasy that they are witches, male or female, and that they are bringing things about in their witchcraft that other people don't know about, and they give themselves a fantasy protection by saying that they are witches. This person, I believe. I believe that this person is a witch. If you look, Neptune is in the first house, indicating a sensitivity to this kind of thing. Neptune forms a very strong sextile to Pluto, which indicates somebody that has the will and ability to control the finer forces of nature. However, those are very distant planets, and distant planets by themselves alone are not enough to do it. But both planets trine and sextile Mars and Mercury. This indicates that she's got the energy. She can galvanize the energy, she can project, she can heal, she can do magical things. She does it on the basis of knowledge. She has knowledge and will. She doesn't do it on the basis of emotion, so this is somebody I believe that can do it. But the part that I'm interested in is the motivation that brings her to be a witch. Here we have yet another person with Saturn square the Sun, and Saturn in the 12th house, and this is another person who's trying to prove something. She's trying to prove something from the past. Now, I'm not sure that neo-paganism is completely pro-evolutionary. It is trying to go back to a nature religion, and it is trying to go back to nature magic rather than moving forward toward divinity and toward creativity. And it's sort of like the word I want to use is too strong of a word and it doesn't have the right connotations, but there is some kind of a regression. And there is a kind of going back to something that the something that you go back to is not bad, but it just isn't pro-evolutionary. And so what I think is because there is a dissatisfaction with herself, and there's a dissatisfaction with herself from the past life, and she's out to prove something in this life. And that is what the hangover is from the immediate past life that is carried out in this life. But the dissatisfaction with self, I believe, is projected on what she sees as the sterile and theologically abstract nature of Christianity. So this is very often the case with neo-pagans. I know quite a few of them. They're not happy with the kind of religion that they see as being primarily ceremonial and that they see as being morally hypocritical. So the self-dissatisfaction becomes a religious issue, and she projects it onto the current religion, and for this reason goes back to what she is trying to prove to herself anyway in becoming a witch and performing magic. It just so happens that she has the capability of doing magic, whether or not it is pro-evolutionary, and I think she's intelligent. This is, again, I don't believe that this is somebody who's a lost soul. There is some temptation with the Saturn square Sun to be very selfish, but I don't think that this is selfish magic. The fact that it is involved with religion and that there are so many planets between the ninth and 11th houses. Half the planets are in the ninth and 11th houses, which are houses of higher ethics and ideals and things of that nature, utopian conditions. I don't believe that this is somebody that's lost, but it's just somebody that's taking a detour because there's something that she feels has to be carried out because it wasn't done. I think that when this life is done, she will feel fulfilled. Probably one of the reasons that she will feel fulfilled is because she is not censured, and she is not, you know, she's not treated badly. All right. Yes.
Would this be considered black magic, though?
Black magic, if it were selfish, it's nature magic. At least, I think. She probably does healing. It's maybe not be the way that we do things. It's energetic healing, and it may not be spiritual healing where you try to solve the problems in someone's soul or help them to see things in their own soul nature so that they can work with them. But I'm not sure that she doesn't do some of that also. I would not say that this is the horoscope of a black magician. This does not have. When you look at the horoscope, you know it's a matter of intuition and feel. And I don't feel uggy kind of things when I look at this horoscope and I say that this is a symbol of this individual. Yes. Okay. So that's exactly so. My take on it was correct then. All right. Let's look at the next horoscope. It's the horoscope of St. Catherine. It's interesting for several reasons. She is, she was a saint, proven saint, and she's a visionary. She was a visionary with visions from St. Mary and from St. Vincent de Paul. If we look, we see the moon is sextile to Jupiter, and it is trine to Pluto, and it is opposite to the sun. And obviously then Jupiter and Pluto are sextile, and Jupiter and the sun are trine. And even Mercury is brought into the whole business. And what we have is a trapezoid. One base of the trapezoid is the moon and sun Mercury. And the other base of the trapezoid is Jupiter and Pluto. And what when you have somebody that has a trapezoid, you have many, many positive tools to overcome one problematic thing. The problematic thing is what Jerry would call firm indecision, the opposition between Taurus and Scorpio. And I would assume that all of these talents are used for dealing with sexuality. By the time you get to be a visionary saint, the same power that is used for your vision, for your clairvoyance, is the same power that is sexual power. And in order to advance into a full saintly state, you have to have overcome the sexual force so that you don't in any way use it for pleasure or anything like that, but you treat it as a divine creative force and you use it for healing or you use it for her creative work or for helping the ongoing things. She was successful. She is a proven saint because the predictions that come out of her visions, both the visions with St. Vincent de Paul and Virgin Mary, her predictions are true. The Venus trines Neptune, and I find this is a commonality that I find with a lot of feminine saints. Venus trine Neptune, they're both quite imaginative planets, But in feminine saints, there is a delicate, a heavenly kind of quality that goes with that. And it's sort of like they can see the more fanciful things of the Spirit, and they see things more from the higher desire world. That she is what they call incorruptible, and that is probably the proof of the fact that she was successful in dealing with the sexual force. By incorruptible is meant that her body was exhumed 57 years after it was interred, and when it was exhumed, it was in the state that it was when she died. It was in perfect condition. There was no rotting or deterioration or anything like that, and that's usually an indication that the vital body was put into such a state that it held things in place. Now, in terms of past lives, that it's usually not a wise idea to have a physical body hanging around here in either a mummified form or in an incorruptible form, and because it is a deterrence from progressing forward. But when you're dealing with a saint, it's hard, you know, all bets are off, and I don't have anything that I really want to say about that. There's one very interesting thing. Three planets have to do with preservation. The moon is one of them, and the moon preserves in some cases by crystallizing or by driving out agencies of deterioration. Like when you take meat, you can store meat at room temperature if it is salted, and that is a lunar process. The general preserver is Jupiter, and the preservation that keeps something in a fixed state that doesn't change is Pluto. And those three planets are in positive aspect with each other, and they're reasonably strong aspects. So it's not surprising to see why she would be so well preserved. The thing we really want to look at is the Saturn conjoined Uranus, because that's the hangover from past lives. And the Saturn conjoined Uranus really doesn't form any other aspects. It's a conjunction at the beginning of a Saturn-Uranus cycle. But this is what brought her back. The Uranus is the new and Saturn is the old. And this is what she is most famous for. This is a continuation of what she did with older forms of the ritual and older forms of practice for people who are aspiring nuns or monks. And she is famous for taking old ways and renewing them and bringing them into the future. It's sort of like she said to herself, or she got into the ritual or ritual practices in such a way, she got into them so deeply that she thought these are good and these have to be continued. And so she brought herself back to birth at such a time that she could continue the work that she had set out to do in the immediately previous life. All right, now let's look at the mystery guests. I'm baffled by it. I'm baffled by it, by the claims. Two of what I consider to be viable clairvoyants have talked about the past lives of this person, and they both agree with each other, but they both got it by their own independent investigations. Anybody have any guesses who this might be or what this person did? Well, you have the horoscope, which is a pretty good clue.
Sort of telepathic?
No. The three most visual or imaginative planets.
Jesus.
No.
Okay.
are in a trine with each other. Neptune is in the first house, and it is trine to the moon and Venus, and those are the three most imaginative planets. Yes, it was a painter. No. This is somebody who is very, very visual. Extremely visual. What? Well, you're all just jumping around guessing. You can, if you want to guess, there's the date is on here. It's 15th century, 1483, a couple hundred years away from Monet. Several hundred years away from Monet. I'll give you a hint. In the immediate precedent life to this one, the person was supposedly John the Baptist, which is interesting because I don't find anything in here that would indicate decapitation. The sun is all alone in Aries, which rules the head, and it doesn't form really any aspects with any other planets. There's a distant trine to Uranus, so you might say that the head is separated, but if it was, it seems to be destiny clean. In an incarnation before being John the Baptist, this person was supposedly Moses. This is a person who, when he was ill, he was so loved by the people, he was stronger than the ruler of Italy. And when he was ill, his nurse was the Pope. He was revered so highly. No, Raphael. This is Raphael. So it's sort of a mystery to me how you can get from John the Baptist to Raphael. We don't have enough this is what I'm talking about, the kinds of problems. I don't have enough information about what the character is. John the Baptist was very outspoken and very sanguine, which might lead to an Aries characteristic. But how you get, and Scorpio is being on the 12th and 1st houses, is no, is no lily about life. The Mercury in this horoscope is not especially strong. So as far as his being a person who is a mouthpiece or a precursor or something like that, I don't see it either. Clearly, the person is very spiritual with Uranus and Neptune both in the first house. But this is given as an example, not only for a guessing game, but to indicate the kinds of problems that one has when you try to see who was who in a past life. And that's about all I have this morning, so let's close with the Rosicrucian Students' Prayer. And then we don't meet until 3:30 when Eddie gives his talk. O God, increase our love for Thee so that we may serve Thee better day to day. Let the words of our mouths and the meditation of our hearts be acceptable in Thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer.
Question.
Yep.
This person is choosing to live his life as a lie.
Yes. There are some positive things to it.
Yeah.
Because if you read the book Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, I read it on tape, and then I gave the tapes to the library because it was such a hot book. This person was really an artist in cosmetic deception. So there is a kind of lie to that, and this is a person that got into the feminine not for being supportive, not for being artistic, but got into the frou-frou aspects of being a woman. And it was it as a male was gay, and so there had to be some of the sexual element in it. But this is somebody that is fascinated by appearance, somebody who is fascinated by being able to appear as someone else. It's interesting here that in this horoscope, the person did have hormonal things, but they weren't natural hormonal things. This is somebody that took massive amounts of hormones to grow breasts and have feminine characteristics. Okay, any other questions or statements?
Is there anyone interested or you have an idea about their past life and you have the chart?
No, I couldn't find any. I was looking and looking and looking. My best bet would have been, but there was a jump of two lives, Sophocles and Richard Wagner. We do have the horoscope of Richard Wagner, but I could not find the horoscope of Sophocles. I do have some ancient Greek horoscopes in the library up in the attic of the other store, but I didn't have time to go digging in there to see if there was one for Sophocles. Some people speculate that Socrates was reborn as Immanuel Kant, which I find hard to believe. But there we have horoscopes for both people. But in the case between Richard Wagner and Sophocles, there was one life as a female musician. Supposedly, Rudolf Steiner claims that Plato, who we do have a horoscope, was reborn as Hrothwa, who was a female mystic and a nun, and that he was very unhappy. He did so well with the philosophy of the Aquarian Age and the Greek ideal and all of that, and did not adapt well to Christianity and to the devotional, pious aspects of Christianity, and had a very difficult time. But I don't know that there's a horoscope for Hrothwa. There's supposedly another horoscope for Raphael. Raphael supposedly was Novalis, the romantic writer. And I think we might be able to get a horoscope of Novalis, which would be interesting to look at relative to this. But I just don't have time to do those kinds of things. Yes?
So is consciousness more easily developed in the earlier part of life or in the later part of life?
How early do you mean?
Childhood?
No. No. In fact, in some ways, I think it's wrong to teach children various kinds of meditation because some of them force things on the developing child that are not the best that you can do for a developing child, because a developing child is naturally spiritual anyway, is to help them to develop at harmony with what's being born in their body. Because around age 7, when the teeth change and they start growing rapidly, there is more of an accentuation on the vital body. And the treatment of the dense physical body, because that's basically what an infant is, it's all physical and nothing more. The treatment of the dense physical body, what works there is different than what you do with the vital body. And then at 14, when there's the major change of life, puberty, that you have to change the development again. And so I think it's more important to just develop what naturally develops at various different ages. And there are accentuations that some things are more important, some stages like between 7 and 14, it might be more important in one horoscope than another. But if a person has a very strongly romantic disposition, then the period between 14 and 21 is more important. I think that the development of consciousness can only really begin after age 28. because until then things are being born in you, and the changes in consciousness come of themselves, and all you can do is give them the best opportunity to develop optimally. After 28, then spiritual consciousness can develop, but it has to be volitional. And it has to be by your own efforts, and you have to pick yourself up by your own bootstraps, and that means a lot of work in spiritual exercises, but that's when the real development of consciousness occurs. Okay, thank you very much.